I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Laura.
Hi, I'm Laura, compulsive overeater and anorexic. Thanks, Harriet, for asking me to speak. I'm a little nervous, and I was telling my sponsor about how this meeting is on the internet and everything, and she said that that was ego, and that's a good reminder that, you know, it's just part of that self-centered fear. And I've also learned that that's the same thing as pride, someone was telling me, which is interesting. I'm still trying to understand pride completely, but I guess it's like worrying about what people think of you, and so I can understand why that's considered such a major character defect. I can relate to that. I've been coming to OA for 16 years. I've got over 15 years of abstinence, a day at a time. And what it was like was I came in here. It took me a long time to come in here after I first knew about OA. And I just think it takes a lot of courage to come for the first time. I was living in New York, and I'd heard about it on, I don't know how I heard about it, but I called the phone number, and I heard all the meetings, and I just couldn't bring myself to go to a meeting. And it wasn't until a year later, I was living in Massachusetts, that I finally went to a meeting. I was remembering that the time that I called for that meeting, it was a person at the office picked up and told me about the meeting that night, and I think that helped me, you know, kind of get there. And I don't know if there's any newcomers here, you know, who didn't identify as a newcomer, because I didn't identify as a newcomer at all at first. I didn't talk, you know, speak at all, and I just wanted to blend into the meeting, so I could understand if anyone's doing that. As far as my food, I basically started binging after I graduated from high school. I had been at boarding school, and my food had been a little bit weird already. Under eating and you know, I was like a skinny kid. I didn't eat very much, and then at boarding school, I would be like really scared to go to the cafeteria because I didn't know who to sit with, and I would just eat stuff in my room, like care package stuff, or just take like a bunch of food. At least my first year there, like a bunch of the cookies or something from the, you know, the school meeting or whatever. Also, I tried to do the, it was an all-girls school, one of the girls told me about the Pritikin diet, and I was trying to do that, and it's really hard to follow. It's like, no, very strict, and I think it's for people that have had heart problems. And I, you know, couldn't follow it for more than like a meal maybe, or at most a day. And and a few times I tried, you know, doing things like that, not very much at all. I didn't have any, you know, success either. But I just thought like I would, you know, be like a morally good person if I could follow it. And then I couldn't. And so when I came home from school, I was pretty much in the house by myself, and I don't know, I just started binging and going from thing to thing in the cabinet and the kitchen, and like eating, you know, something and then going to something else, and you know, and I was very secretive about it, and it continued all through college. Yeah, I was very secretive about it, though. And I remember one time running into this friend of mine, and I was holding this cake that I had, was going to binge on. And I was, like, shaking when I saw her. And she didn't know it was wrong, because I just felt like I had been caught, even though, you know, she didn't know I was planning to go and eat it. And, you know, just hiding. And I looked, you know, my weight was normal, so it was, people couldn't tell. You know, it was easy for me to hide what I was doing. And, you know, I would take my roommate's food and eat it, and then eat it back to, buy it, eat it back to where they had it. This one roommate, I don't know, she had some kind of, like, I think it was, like, some kind of powder that you mix with something to make, like, a diet drink. Or I don't know, but it was, like, a chocolate powder, and I just would, like, eat the plain chocolate powder and just, you know, I guess I didn't buy those foods for myself because I was always trying to, you know, be good with my food or whatever, so I'd have to eat somebody else's. Sometimes I did buy it for myself, and, you know, and then I would sometimes, like, I just remember thinking what the person at the cashier was thinking, because I was buying, like, every, you know, one of each flavor of, you know, something, and what else? Throwing things away, getting them back out of the garbage, eating them. You know, just eating large quantities of food. I mean, this one time my parents sent me this care package, and it was called the All Natural Procrastinator or something. It had some cute name. And it was like all health food, and I just binged on the whole thing. And I really remember that. And I don't know, I had a pineapple in it, and I didn't have a knife or anything, and I don't know, somehow I ate that pineapple. And I don't know how I did that, but I just, you know, I remember doing that. And it was just so crazy. So I really knew, like, I had a problem, and I needed help, and... but as I said, it took me a while to get here. But luckily, I did get here. It was shortly after I graduated college. I think it was hard for me. You know, it made sense to me in a way that that's when I finally hit bottom or came in or whatever, because it was out of that structure of school. And I didn't really identify... I did identify with what people said. I felt kind of different from everyone at the meeting I was going to. I didn't look overweight, and I was younger than some people and stuff, but I totally identified with what they were saying about food. And I kept coming, and I don't know what brought me, just got me to keep coming, and I tried to be abstinent by myself, and I just couldn't do it. And so one night I went to a meeting, and I said, okay, I'm not leaving this meeting without a sponsor. And the speaker, I asked her, and she said she'd be my temporary sponsor. And she asked me, like, if I'd had dinner and what I had in the house, and she told me, like, go home and have, you know, this and this for dinner and call me at 6:15 in the morning or something like that. And and it was really a relief to me, because I didn't know how to go home and, like, have a plate of dinner with a few things on it, you know. That helped me. And she also talked about one day at a time in her share. She talked about going out for ice cream with her husband and then just saying, I'm not going to have it today, but saying that every day. And that kind of got that concept in there with me. And, you know, all those these things I still need to be reminded of. I have a 2-year-old son, and I just found out he had this peanut and nut allergy. And I was getting really worried about different things about it. And, you know, I was reminded one day at a time, you know, just for today, I just have to, you know, not give him those foods and have this medication, you know, with him all the time. And that's really all I have to do. And it just, I'm definitely someone that tends to be in my head a lot, worry, and I always just, you know, need to remember to do it one day at a time, or if it's something in the future, you know, just what action can I take today? Anyway, I'm going off the subject, but it's, I'll just share this because this has helped me. Another sponsor of mine told me if there's something I was worried about, to write it down on a piece of paper, put it in an envelope, and put it in my drawer, and then I can always just pick it back up, you know, tomorrow or another time. Anyway, when I first became abstinent, I didn't keep that abstinence. I kept it for a while, but it was no sugar, no flour, 3 meals a day, nothing in between, and everything was weighed and measured, certain amounts of everything. And I was kind of white-knuckling it, and but it did help me to just kind of see what a meal was, because I would just be standing up in the kitchen eating, you know, from a package or something. So just to be able to sit down with a plate or bowl and, you know, eat a meal, that was, really helpful for me to learn. And anyway, I was moving across country and was, you know, didn't go to meetings for a little while, and I broke my abstinence. And you know, someone in Massachusetts gave me the number of someone out here, so that person became my sponsor for a while, and you know, got me to go to meetings right away when I got here. So that was really helpful. The current abstinence I have, I was still trying to stick to that food plan, and I messed up, and I had an apple, and I was like, okay, I just, you know, totally screwed up again, you know, I had this apple, and I might as well just eat a jar of peanut butter. And and then I went to a meeting, and something, I don't know, I just got something at that meeting, and the next day I was able to be abstinent. And my abstinence has changed. It's, I abstain from sugar, and I have 3 meals a day, and I don't it's not 3 meals a day, nothing in between, it's just at least 3 meals. I don't skip meals. I do have, you know, so that's my basic abstinence, and then I do have snacks. And as far as the flour, for me, I found it was okay. At a certain point, I realized it wasn't a problem, but for me, I felt like sugar is not something I'm supposed to have. It just doesn't work for me. So, anyways, I also, another thing that happened with me is that I lost a lot of weight that I didn't need to lose, basically, and a sponsor, pointed at, had me look at the anorexic, you know, side of the disease, and, you know, that took a lot of willingness. That was really when I started praying, and you know, asking God for help. Because I was so, I didn't really know anything except binging or like being really rigid, and I was afraid like if I sort of let go at all that I would just binge. I didn't know how to be in between that. And so I really had to ask God for help and, you know, just say, okay, God, if I'm supposed to, if you want me to, you know, weigh more, whatever, I'm willing to do it, you know. I just felt like I wanted to be more connected to other people. And I did see a nutritionist at the time who helped me. So that's when my abstinence, you know, changed a little bit. And I also started working on the steps and taking a service position, which helped me because it got me talking to, you know, I was a treasurer, so I had to talk to the secretary, and I felt a lot more involved in the meeting, and I started raising my hand. I had a family tragedy around that time, early in my absence. My brother commits suicide, and that also was part of, like, me being willing to look at, you know, my weight. And getting the support from the meetings. My family, I'm not sure how much they understand the program. I think they've gone through different phases. At one point, it was really sweet. I was visiting my parents. They live back east, and I wanted to go to a meeting, and they, like, helped me look online where to go and everything. It was really sweet, I thought. And I think more recently, my mother has been concerned. She feels that I look thin, so she finds it confusing that I go to Overeaters Anonymous, and she doesn't really understand it right now. But I've always heard it doesn't really matter what other, you know, if other people get it, as long as, like, I have to get it, it doesn't really matter what other people around me, if they get it or not. Yeah, I worked the steps with my sponsor. Well, I actually had a lot of different sponsors during the time I worked the steps, but I just, you know, I would just pick up where I had dropped off at the last one, basically, and just different things happened. People moved or got busy or whatever. I always feel like I've had the right person during that period of my life. And it took me a few years to do the steps the first time. I was working at the OA 12 and 12 book, and I would, like, read a paragraph and write a page on each paragraph for the first three steps. And then my fourth step took me about a year, and I kind of had to just make a deadline for myself. And I had to do my fifth step in three different sessions. It's still, you know, the thing that they say that you're only as sick as your secrets is, you know, I still feel a lot of freedom if there's something that, you know, I can tell someone that it's been like a secret. It still, you know, can give me a lot of freedom. The sixth and seventh step, you know, there wasn't that much really to do for that for those. In terms of actions, but I was always worried about the ninth step. When I first came in, there was a play at the OA birthday party about making amends, and I remember watching that play and getting really nervous about it. And my sponsor was really helpful. She had me, after I made my list, make it from order from easiest to hardest. Mm-hmm. So I got to start at the easiest. And I also read run everything by her, and some things, she was funny, she would say, next, like, which meant, like, I didn't really do anything, which was nice. I just made the amends as the best I could. And then 10, 11, and 12, as far as, I never do any of them perfectly. Like, there's been times I've done a daily 10th step, but I haven't done it for, like, years and years. I just sometimes do it. Lately I find the format of A-E-I-O-U-Y, you know, I guess I'll say what that is, abstinent. As I abstinent, did I exercise? I, what did I do for myself? Oh, what did I do for others? You, uncover feelings. Why? Yahoo, what did I do well? And then three things I'm grateful for. And I've been doing that in my head a lot because sometimes I'm with my son trying to get him to fall asleep, and I just kind of run through it in my mind. And, you know, sometimes there's a category that comes up, I can't think of anything. Like, what I can't think of something I did for myself or that I did for others. But usually, you know, at least I can always think of something I'm grateful for. And the 11th step is the same kind of thing. Mostly I always pray. The only time I really don't pray is if I forget. And then sometimes I just, if I remember at some point during the day. But usually I pray in the morning, and I was just, at the beginning I was just taught to pray, you know, to God to help me be abstinent today, and then at the end of the day, thank God for helping me be abstinent. And now I mostly do the first three steps, the serenity prayer, the third step prayer, and the seventh step prayer, and, you know, a few others if I remember a few others. And it's definitely helpful during the day, especially the serenity prayer. And my son knows to say amen, and he knows, he chimes in some of the words too. The meditation is one of those, every once in a while I've gone through a period of time where I've meditated every day. I don't know when the last time was, but and I've done different things where I've timed it, like 5 minutes, and usually, I don't always have that meditative experience. Like, a lot of times I'm just thinking about things the whole time, or I'm just thinking about things in the very end. I kind of feel like I've meditated, but I know it's really important for me, not just for my recovery, but because I have a tendency towards anxiety. You know, to meditate. So listening to tapes helps me. Sometimes I just listen to tapes, or stretching helps me get out of my head too. So just whatever to remind me of that conscious contact. And as far as step 12, I got asked to sponsor people pretty early on, like, you know, someone just came up and said, will you be my sponsor? And I sponsored a lot of people, and a lot of them didn't stick for a long time. But I kept being abstinent. And, more recently I sponsored some people for a longer period of time, and we had, you know, it was really nice. And, it's like I always forget a lot of the things in the program, and I need to be reminded all the time. You know, I still forget all the basic things, like a day at a time. And but I could probably remember better if I'm telling someone else who's calling me or an outreach call. And you haven't been sponsoring anyone recently, but just when I'm talking to some, you know, it's easier with someone else's things to remember. Someone else's problems. Let's see, practicing the principles. Yeah, you know, I try to apply this to my life, and I don't do it perfectly by any means, and I've also gone through the steps two more times, basically because I had new sponsors, and they just guided me through the steps again a couple more times. I was reading something in the Lifeline. They were talking about whether you redo the steps or just review them. I don't know, but I thought it was an interesting question. But I guess I've redone them three times. And recently I was kind of thinking maybe I need to redo them again. And then sometimes I just have done them regarding different things, like work or relationships. As far as the food, for the most part, the obsession has been lifted from me, and I don't really have to worry about what the food's going to be, or I did a lot, maybe more earlier in my abstinence, now, you know, I can mostly just show up and trust I'll be taken care of. And also, some, you know, it goes both ways. Sometimes I need to be prepared. And, like, if I travel, I might bring some food along. And but I can, you know, when I was working in an office and there was a lot of food there, I didn't have to go through the questioning myself of should I have some, should I not have some, is anyone going to see me have any, is anyone going to see me going back to have four, and all that stuff. It's such a relief not to have to just go through that with, you know, certain foods. I just know I just don't have that today. And at the beginning, early in my abstinence, I think one time I even broke my abstinence because I had a hard time with people, like, pressuring me, like, oh, don't you want some dessert or whatever. I had a really hard time with that. And I don't know, it's gotten easier. Sometimes I still feel, like, a little self-conscious in certain situations. I don't often really explain about OA. The times that I do are like, if someone specifically says something to me, like, oh, I wish I could do that, I wish I could not eat that like you, or something like that, then I would tell them. But in general, you know, I don't too much, really. I'm not sure how much time I have left, but I'm just looking at the 12 steps and the traditions, and I have to say I'm so grateful for the traditions. I mean, you know, I know that OA and LA is really strong, and it's just so comforting to come to a meeting and know, like, you know, there's a format and that we're kind of sticking to, you know, what the meeting's about. And I know I get a lot of comfort from that. And I'm not sure. I think I'll just open it for questions.
Laura, could you talk a little about how you use the steps to sort of balance the both sides of the disease, the overeating and the anorexic part? Is there a way you've found to sort of use that?
Okay. Do you want me to repeat it?
No, I think you got that one. Yes, but in the general.
Okay. let's see. Well, I guess whenever I've done the first step, like the last time I did the first step, I did a food history. And when I did that food history, you know, I could see different times in my life, you know, things that were like anorexic in how I approach food or in my thinking, and compulsive overeating also. So the first step just helps remind me, you know. It was a little bit easier for me with the compulsive overeating because it's so obvious. You know, I mean, it's like I'm binging. I mean, it's obvious I'm binging, you know, and it's not so subtle. For me, the anorexic part, at least for me, is more subtle, and it's kind of like a little bit more of that cunning, baffling, and powerful, like a little bit more... sometimes harder for me to be aware of. You know, I don't have the story that some people have. I mean, I wasn't hospitalized. You know, I didn't go to that length. It's more just my thinking about food, like controlling and, you know, rigidity and stuff. So as far as using the steps, I guess... you know, just the spiritual awakening, like I was saying, how I was afraid, like, I was either going to binge, or I had to, like, be really controlling. So for me, that, it's like, if I can trust God or higher power, that, you know, maybe I'd be okay. maybe if I eat, you know, when I was first, you know, I needed to gain weight, I saw a nutritionist, and she suggested, I used to buy the snacks for this company I worked at. Now, I never had any, but I bought them. So she said, you know, why don't you have one or whatever? And I was like, okay. And I was really afraid. But yeah, it was just sort of like trusting that was going to be okay. And, you know, I had sort of weird things like I only let myself drink water. And, you know, so I could have juice, you know, that it was all right. But at the same time, I know, you know, for me, I don't really have soda. I don't think that works for me. So it's kind of like finding that balance and moderation. And, you know, I'm still working on it, and it also applies to like other areas of my life. So I don't know if that answers it. But.
Thank you for your share. I have a two-part question. First, do you have any other family members that have eating disorders? And the second, can you talk about how your head and your body image were during your pregnancy?
Oh, sure. I have a cousin that was anorexic. I think that's all, though, you know, that I'm aware of. During my pregnancy, you know, I enjoyed my pregnancy a lot. I really did. My head and my body image. There was one time where, I guess, there's a certain amount of weight, like they say in the books. I can't even remember, like a pound a week at a certain point or whatever it is. And I had that in my mind, and I remember going to this one doctor's appointment, and I don't remember where I was, but she said like I gained like 25 pounds, and it kind of freaked me out, but it only lasted for like less than a day. And then, you know, I talked to someone about it or whatever. So there's maybe a couple times in there that I, you know, felt a little bit weird. But like I said, it was really brief. And, I knew it was, you know, not about me, about the baby. And I was sharing with a mom in the program who called me today about, she's asking about that too. And, you know, it was nice having, like, you know, for me, I guess just being more relaxed about, I don't know what word to use, but, I mean, I definitely couldn't be, like, rigid and stuff about what I was eating. I could be a little more relaxed about my food plan, I guess. Like, there's this one time for morning sickness, I was really suffering from it, and I'd heard that ginger would help. And I just haven't really had sodas in my absence for, you know, and I didn't know what to do, so I called my sponsor, and I was like, you know, I might just need to have a ginger ale. She's like, that's fine, and I talked to her about it beforehand. And then I realized, oh, I can just have some ginger herbal tea. And it was like, I could have had the ginger ale, it was fine, but I found something else that worked. And there was a couple of, I don't know if I'd say, I didn't have cravings too much. I had a couple of strong ideas about, like, things I wanted to eat. And but one of them was, like, cheese popcorn. And I was, like, I wasn't willing to buy a big bag of it because I can't handle a big bag of something. I'm just going to keep putting my hand in and stuff. And I just couldn't find a little one serving bag of it anywhere. And I kept like looking around for one serving bag, and then someone bought one of those big, you know, around the holidays they got one of these big things at the office. I was like, oh, okay. I took like a handful in a bowl. I went to my desk and I ate it, and then I was kind of like over that. And same thing happened with like a cheese bagel or something. But I was over it, and I don't know, it wasn't too bad. It's the cravings. But that was a little bit scary for me because it sort of reminded me of binging, and I wasn't quite sure what to do with that. But, yeah.
If I have one.
Sure. my higher power. Well, I guess I've gone through different phases. Like, I went through this time, I can't remember what it was about, but I was really, really beating myself up. And I just felt like I wanted to fire my higher power because I felt like my higher power was judging me and made me more judgmental of myself. It wasn't that long ago either. It was like, I don't know, a year ago or something. And I just, I mean, I'd heard people say that, and I just had this idea, I want to fire my higher power. And it was really freeing, and I liked, you know, it felt good just to say, you know, I'm just going to start anew. And I don't really know how I define my, I mean, I think of my higher power as God, and I guess it's hard, you know, I try not to get into that judgmental God. I think it's hard, I tend to go there, but more just loving, all, you know, all-knowing, and just, you know, very comforting, like, especially because I'm such a worrier, and decisions are, I get so caught up in trying to make decisions and stuff, that's like, God knows what to do, or something in me, like, knows, you know, the right thing to do. So, I don't know if that's like a real definition, but that's sort of my thoughts on it.
I just wanted to take a moment, for those of you who are listening to my voice, you may not know it, but you're actually part of the largest OA meeting in the world right now. There's, what, 30 or 40 of us sitting here in Brentwood, California, but last week over 300 people listened to this meeting online, so we're looking at 330, 340 people at each meeting, and this is all thanks, I think, in a lot of ways to Roy L., who started this meeting on September 1st, 2001, right before 9/11, and started taping right from the first one, because that's what he knew from AA. And as a result, now, you know, our virtual speaker bureau has been up for over a year and a half, and we've had over 170,000 listens from this meeting and some of the other meetings in the intergroup from 106 different countries. So those of you who come to light a candle in person, or if you're listening, keep coming back.